You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? It is your boy, the Don Sean, and I am here with...
It's been a long time, bro. It is your patron saint, St. Parish Antoine, at your service once more.
And we are here with the man, the myth. It's your turn, my guy.
It's my turn? Oh, crap. I'm Lauren, the proud host of Your Dose of Death podcast. Thank you for having me on, fellas.
We appreciate you for coming back into the penthouse. Don Sean, we've been gone for a bit, man. I've been gone for a bit.
Let's not make it seem like I've been missing.
Yeah.
Guys, I am so grateful. I am so pleased, number one, to have Lauren here with us. Me and Lauren have been going back and forth for a few weeks. You guys haven't seen the episode yet, but I just recorded a few interviews last week, and you've heard me talking about it, how just the winter, the new year, the holiday, things kind of get crazy with the schedule, so a lot of rescheduling happened. Today's the day. Officially, no more reschedules, no more roadblocks, no more no call, no show.
Nowhere to hide.
We got the man in the house. We are here with the number one deathmatch podcast in all of the land, Your Dose of Death. There are a lot of great deathmatch content creators, but what Lauren and Savino are doing on Your Dose of Death is great, and I'm so glad to have one half of that podcast here. You guys have seen the Kings Road Wrestling episode. If you have not, it is on our YouTube. It is on a bunch of our social media channels. And there's also an episode with Kings Road Wrestling family. Justin Finn also available. It is nice to have another extension of that family here on the show with us. So thank you, Lauren, for coming back.
Thank you. You got me blushing over here. Come on now. You're gassing me up, man.
That's the type of energy we need, guys. Hype up your fellow content creators in the same way. Bro, St. Polo, St. Parish, Anton. Welcome back to the penthouse, buddy. It's been a minute.
Appreciate
guys.
You,
if you
man.
Guys don't know, Cash. I'm not going to put my man's business out, but my man's been out here on a journey. We're talking about wrestling. My man's on a journey to become that wrestler that we all talk about. It's been pretty crazy. How you been, man?
It's been quite a journey, my man. I can't complain. It ain't about a complaint. It's about maintaining. So I've definitely been doing a lot of maintaining the last year and a half. A lot of work been put in, a lot more work to be put in. But I'm happy to be back. It's Talking Elite. We back in the penthouse. Let's get this show rocking and rolling. Cause it's been a year and a half. We only got so little time to make up for so much time, you know?
Absolutely. Well, guys, we are here, Don Sean, St. Parish, Lauren, and we're just gonna jump right into it. Lauren, man, you know, there's a lot of content creators out there, so many people with just different vibes and just different things that they're going for, man. And I'm sure the number one question we all would have right in the beginning is, what made you break through and have that confidence to say, I want to start a podcast and this is what it is?
I love this question. I love answering this question because my story is not the most ideal, but of course it's kind of starts off typical. Of course, a lot of us during COVID, me especially, we're kind of holed up. We're like, you know, trying to figure out our way to kind of get through things. And I will say this right off the bat for anyone listening to this. I never had any intention before 2021 to even be a podcaster to start off. I just want to say that. This was a complete 180 in my life that I decided to take because I was like, okay, I'm just kind of going through things. I've been here. I kind of go in and out of circles. But really, if we want to pinpoint the exact moment, so this was October, I want to say, of 2020. GCW just did start during their collective event in Indianapolis. I wasn't there, of course. I was still a little cautious about doing a trip like that. And, of course, some people got sick, but that's kind of the risk we take these days. But I was watching the match, and I started getting into deathmatch more during COVID too, because we had so much time to go back. I'm a history buff, love history of anything. So combine deathmatch wrestling and history of it, like just watching back as a historian, just like it gets you so pumped up. So seeing Matt Tremont versus Alex Colon, which was supposedly Matt's last match with GCW at the time,
At the time.
At the time. And I was kind of on Twitter, just kind of interacting with people. I was in circles. And the circles I was around who were getting into GCW, they just started lampooning. They started making fun. They started berating the genre of deathmatch. They're like, I'm watching this show, but I don't want to watch this. It's like, what are you even doing here? If you're not going to give it 100%, like, don't do it at all. Like, you know what I mean? Don't be in this. You're in this for wrong reasons. You're just in it because certain TV talent are on the show. Current journalistic publication. I won't even mention who they are. They don't deserve the attention. They don't need the attention. They were just kind of the ones leading the front on this. And I was like, you're not doing a good job. I just saw people who were in wrestling journalism not doing the job that's put in front of them. Cover the show with a death match or not. And I mean, just do it. Like, I mean, it's not everyone's cup of tea. I understand that. But I was like, but then there something ticked in my brain during that night of Cologne versus Shane. I'm like, I can't just be that angry social media person my entire life. I just can't anymore. I want to make a change. I want to do it well where I leave my mark on the wrestling community no matter what. And so I put out a tweet near like December of 2020. I'm like, hey, listen, if anyone's interested in having me on, talk about deathmatch wrestling, anyone who wants me to do a podcast on it, feel free. Lo and behold, this little, now pretty decently known wrestling podcast network called Count Out. I don't know if you've heard of them or not. They've been making the rounds a little lately. And now, since I've been a part of it, we've had now 4 shows since I was like show number one. I was part of the inception. And
that's pretty dope.
Mikey, I owe so much to Mikey Manfredi and Ryan Knightsey of Count Out for putting their faith in me. I first started writing for them. And the first article I ever did was like my test run interview. So this is about January of 2021. It was with Sean, you might know him. The smash hit Joel Bateman was my very first interview. One of my best friends in literally the entire world. We may not be in the same country. We may not even be in the same continent, but our friendship knows no bounds. So shout out, Joel. I love you, dude.
Yeah, shout out to Joel. I got to meet Joel. Sorry to cut you off.
Got
to meet Joel at Marcus Mathers All I Want event. That was actually the first event I got to sponsor. And we were there, and I got to meet Joel after his match with Cole Radrick.
Hell of a match.
Cool. You know, he hits the Zandig, and you know, he's covered in blood, and it's just, he was such, you know, obviously, you know, with his accent and stuff, he was such a sweetheart to talk to, just very willing, you know, even just when I was telling him, you know, like, hey, you know, I'm a newer podcaster, just more so in the public, but, you know, I work around celebrities and talent all the time, you know what I mean, and what I do in my personal life, so I just let him know that, you know, I see them basically on that same level. They just don't get the recognition, you know, and he kind of chewed that up and ate that up, and, you know, it brought a big smile to his face. But man, like, it's amazing, man. Nobody really understands what they're attempting to do and what those performances are. So I understand completely. I kind of get sick and tired of seeing they're doing this for $20 and a Pepsi Cola and stuff comments to it. Frustrates me. I sit with you when you say that, but not to cut you off, let you continue. Sorry.
No, that's all good. I love the banter. It's always great. Joel is a gem of the industry. Does not get enough credit. So we do that, and he's like, you definitely have what it takes. So I did the article. Ryan's like, this is good. Like, let's start getting the groundwork. I get my microphone, get my first headset. This is my newer one. I start putting flyers out there. I'm like, hey, I want to do like interviews solely to start off. And the first person, the very first episode was none other than Bam Sullivan. I owe him a huge debt for putting his faith in me. Just some random guy from just outside Chicago being like, oh yeah, I'll do this interview. No charge whatsoever. And it just kind of avalanched from there where I had him. I had Alex Colon, another guy who I owe an absolute incredible ton to. I know he's taking a nice little break from wrestling, deservingly so. but he was one of the first guys I messaged, and without a single hesitation, he's like, "Yep." I'm like, "You sure?" Like, I'm not like some like top tier deathmatch journalist yet. I'm just some dude. He's like, "Yep, no problem whatsoever." Like, we'll do it. Did that. Awesome. One of my favorite, and then it just went from him, Tremont, Mickey Knuckles, which is one of the craziest interviews. If you go back and listen to that, that was one of the craziest interviews I've ever done in my life, where literally we recorded. My friend who got me in touch with her, he's like, "Just so you know, she's going to be driving around, because this is, we did this before Mania week, the week before Mania week."
Wow.
And she's like at a Walmart. She's then goes to a Qdoba. Then she's in her car, just all over the damn place. And it's crazy. Like, that was like the first evolution of Your Dose of Death, just getting these interviews. But then kind of was talking with myself. It was like, I was talking with myself, and I was like, I didn't think about it. I was like, I want to work alone. I feel like it's just my vision. But then they were like, "You know, you should look for a co-host." And that's when Mike Servino came in. Servino came in. So his first time on the podcast, we did I think it was an NGI preview. It was NGI 6 we previewed. And I was like, "You know, like, I like this guy a lot. And I'm just not too sure, though, if he could be co-host." But he said he had had podcast experience, so I kept that in the back of my head. And then my podcast bosses, Ryan and Mikey, they're like, "Why don't you make Servino your co-host?" And I'm like, "You know, I think it's about damn time I make him my co-host." And we literally we clicked. From the minute I had him on first to recording day in, day out with him, it has just been an absolute pleasure, and it's been a hell of a ride. I mean, we've done so much. I don't even think it's been a full year with him since he became my co-host, and he has checked every box off that I need for a co-host. I really cannot complain, and it's only going to get better from here. I mean, now we've just hit over 10,000 downloads for the podcast overall. We're probably one of the most listened to podcasts on the Countout Network, from my recollection, and we're out and about. We're working with promotions. We're sponsoring. We're just trying to do more than what we initially started. We want to give Deathmatch a good name. That's really the message I want to get out there.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the platform you guys are presenting and creating, for sure, just as a whole, like I said, just with the King's Road family, for sure, man. I mean, you just took the words right out of my mouth, Parrish. Just straight elevating it, for sure. I mean, even from the time of when me and him did our episode last summer, so where you guys are now, too, just the way you guys are creating the content, the way the content's being presented, just kind of the diverse avenues now that you guys are pursuing in terms of wrestler sponsorship, manager sponsorship, you know, event sponsorship. It's pretty cool. You know, like, it's amazing that you got Servino to be your co-host, too, especially seeing recently he posted news that he's going to be doing the CZW commentary, if I'm correct, right, for the Tournament of Death.
So he did Tournament of Death this past year. He was going to do Ultraviolet Underground, but due to reasons out of his control, he's not doing Ultraviolet Underground anymore. That's just a decision he made on his own. I support him. I support him 110% whatever he does. I mean, he's one of my best friends, and he did a hell of a job doing TOD. If you haven't seen that, Joe, check that show out. And mind you, the story. Did he tell you the story of how he got asked to do commentary for that show? It's a pretty incredible story, actually.
No, he didn't.
So he had texted me the day after, because I had already been texting with Big F and Joe, another one of my great friends in wrestling, one of the coolest dudes ever. But I knew Mike Servino was going to Tournament of Death with one of his friends, shout out Jared Cornelius, a part of the Kings Road family as well. And he's like, he parked his car to get ready to go in, and they run up to his car and they're like, "Hey, like, Mike, we need you." And he's like, "Why?" And he's like, they're like, "We need you for commentary. The guy who was supposed to do it didn't show up. Like, we need someone to step on commentary with." I forget who it was that did it with them. And so literally it was a complete last minute miracle that he was doing commentary for Tournament of Death. Yikes. It's pretty insane.
I mean, just think about how legendary that Tournament of Death is. And, you know, we talked about it many times, me, him, Justin, you know, kind of when we got together, just what that tournament meant for many of us watching CZW earlier, going back and watching CZW tapes. So, I mean, it was pretty cool. I remember seeing some clips he had shared. You know, like I just said it before, he channeled his inner Joey Styles for sure with his Oh My Gods. That made me laugh for sure. But, you know, the dude's a great dude, man, you know, and I have not a bad thing to say about him. You know, I'm grateful to be befriended by him and made friends, you know, with him and everything as well. Just kind of the way we do when we do chat, you know, it's always love and respect. So, you know, I think you got a great co-host on board with you for sure, man.
Yeah, could not be a better co-host. Everyone was saying that you two needed to work together, and it just match made in heaven, as they say, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Parrish, what's on your mind to ask Lauren, the guy?
Man, I mean, you covered the deal of being able to, like, have the gumption to start a podcast. What made you just become a pro wrestling fan in general, or just a wrestling fan at heart?
This is another fun one. So what's funny is it wasn't a match that made me a fan back in 2008. It was actually on the road to WrestleMania. It was a Randy Orton promo. I forget exactly when. But just the way he reeled me in, I was like, shit, like, I don't know who this is, but I just love what he's saying. Like, I was channel surfing one night and I was like, this guy's cool. And then I just kind of was like researching. I'm like, oh, this is a feud. And it just all like kind of came together from there. And I like my early favorites. I loved Edge and Christian, all timers to me. Christian, especially during his ECW run, like that 2008-2009, I was like the first real run I got into. just those Tuesday night ECWs when he won the ECW championship were my favorite.
Not a lot of people
guys
talk
about
that
sci-fi right now. They're talking about
the yeah,
yeah. Not a lot of people mention the sci-fi era of ECW, man.
But like
not
his all, run, his run to end like, that's it. That's what got you good. There. His run to end ECW was just so good. Like the matches with him. Shelton Benjamin, that TLC, that ladder match they had at TLC was so good. Him and Dreamer, not many guys can say they got a great match out of Dreamer in the later years of his career. It's just Christian was just such a good dude. I mean, Orton always will be a favorite. I think there's not many people in wrestling who can just reel you in with the gravitas that he has. To get into deathmatch wrestling, it was funny. I was just on YouTube one day, and it just popped up on my, like, you know how YouTube is with, like, the algorithm and whatnot.
Yeah,
it just showed up, and I was like, yep, recommend for you. It reeled me in, and I was like, I am hooked. I'm like, where has this been my entire freaking life, and how do I, like, look
how do I
after
do it?
So, well, no. Oh, hell no. I respect the guys too much. They'd be like, why is this guy getting the damn ring?
I do gotta ask, like, what was the first death match you saw?
Man, I forget already. I think it was also it kind of like I don't remember the exact first match, but the time where I was like I saw it and then I went away from it, but then saw it again was actually due to a good friend of mine. If you know Wrestling Unicorns, Martin Carrillo and John Huerta, two of the finest content creators in all of wrestling. Like, there are, you cannot find two great individuals like them. And they did NGI 4. They did the Nick Gage Invitational 4. And just the clips I saw from that, everything from that show was like, yeah, I need to be here. And I need to, like, I will say what an amazing moment that no one talks about. I mean, yeah, Chicago is a hotbed of wrestling, but when Ricky Shane Page debuted in GCW and pulled the NWO treatment on the GCW belt, I got goosebumps. I got goosebumps from that moment. I'm like, there are not many storytellers in deathmatch wrestling, it seemed like. And this guy popped up out of nowhere, did the RSP in orange on the GCW belt. I got chills. I was like, that is how you make a debut. No one does that on the indies anymore.
If I'm correct, that was when he started kind of his
440.
Yeah, but that's not only did the 440 thing, but isn't that also the feud he ended up feuding with Gage?
Yes.
That, no.
Yep. Yes, Gage won NGI4.
It was just stuck in my brain. It was just, it hit that wall. I couldn't get it out.
So what happened was, so Gage won NGI4. He was defending the GCW belt during that. And RSP actually took an ode from Edge. If you remember ECW One Night Stand with Cena and RVD when Edge came out with the biker helmet. So RSP did that as like a homage to Edge, which popped me even more. And did it, and then like showed it was RSP, and everyone was like, "Holy crap!" And then did the NWO graffiti to the bell, and I was like, "This has me hooked. This is exactly what we need in wrestling."
Absolutely. I mean, you hit the nail on the head, kind of with that's something that we've talked about with Savino. I know it's something that I've heard Clone go and talk about on many live streams that he's been a part of. Just kind of like the lost art of storytelling in deathmatch wrestling. You know, I think it's been coming back a lot more. I feel like the more certain participants have been hearing the bring storytelling, bring the, you know, the match rhythm and all that stuff back. But yeah, like if you go on the early tapes, you know, just some, you know, the early XPWs, the early CZWs, just everything. It was a lot more wrestling, a lot less, you know, violence. And then just now it's just crazy ultra violence with a little bit of wrestling. You know, I think certain wrestlers have the ability to still tell the story, you know, like the Drew Parkers, Rene Amistas of the world. But, you know, some of them are still lacking. So, you know, I definitely think with deathmatch wrestling that there's a lot of growth still yet to come.
There is. It's an interesting thing you bring up because I've wanted to talk about this for a while because the deathmatch fan base is such an interesting enigma because they love this. They love what they do. It's probably the most interactive fan base because a lot of the wrestlers appreciate, so they'll give their appreciation. But sometimes I always feel they try to gatekeep the genre. Like, oh, they don't want getting bigger. Like when AEW would do some deathmatch-oriented matches, they're like, why is this on TV? It's like, don't you want to see the thing that you love grow? Like, that's the energy I love.
If you're going to do it on TV, do it right. I remember those tweets. If you're going to do it right. But, like, those guys or those TV guys aren't deathmatch guys.
No.
Right. And you got to remember the TV guys are going to have a little bit more of a limited, you know, capacity of what you usually see
exactly
in a traditional deathmatch.
Exactly. And it just boggles my mind. They're all like, I don't want to see this, but I want to see it. It's like, to me,
can't have
like,
the cake and eat it.
Yeah, it's just it blows my mind a little bit.
So it's funny that you say that, right? So I mean, we can go all the way back to probably the last episode me and Parrish did together, which was the Stan Michael episode. Was kind of one of the episodes we started talking about how the deathmatch community or wrestling community fandom is becoming very clicky at times, right? Then that conversation carried over in the Kings Road episode. And, you know, Savino and me had a great chat about that. And, you know, I think he has some opinions that, you know, we were able to voice on there. And then obviously, you know, there's certain things that you can't always put out on the open, you know what I mean? And then there was, you know, conversations even on Jay Finn's episode. And then even Mario of the Lucha Outsider show episode. Like, this is a topic I feel like comes up. I've noticed with wrestlers, with creators, with other people. Yeah. It's just this this clickiness or like this, like you said, this gatekeeping, you know, in the military, we call them badge protectors, like the people who won't help you, like they won't help you go and like earn your badge, like the badge you need, whether it be like the expert infantry badge or the expert medical field medical badge or the airborne or, you know, like people just want to, it's we're an exclusive club, keep it for us. But as you said, you know, and like Parrish was saying, number one, they're on TV. The scope of their deathmatch knowledge is limited. The best matches that we did get to see were the Lights Out matches, you know, which featured Joey, of course. You know, Joey was obviously able to push that for AEW a bit. You know, but I definitely think that some people, like you said, they just need to be more open. They need to be more accepting. Like, I am glad that they were able to get that style of wrestling just on the television, even whether it was Tay Conti and Anna Jay. And you know what? Like, was it the most phenomenal death match in the world? No. Was it a good match? Yes, it was a good match. Did it bring eyes to the style? Yes, it brought eyes to the style. And, you know, for me, like, just as a wrestling fan in general, like, I can't sit here and say I'm a better wrestling fan than anybody else. You know what I mean? I love wrestling. I love all forms. I love deathmatch. Deathmatch makes me happy.
When it comes to that,
the violence.
I know nothing.
You know, like I can't lie. Like, you know what it's like. You go to the Showboat for a GCW show and it's going insane. I brought my friend who's never been to a wrestling show to a GCW show, and even he was excited to talk about it after the fact.
Yeah.
And we talked about how Kerry Morton was sticking his ass on him still to this day. You know,
Kerry. I want to say this. The way I put it with deathmatch wrestling, it's the most realistic art form of the genre. Like, I always see fans, and this makes me laugh all the time. They're like, I want to see more blood in my wrestling. I want to see this. Like, I want to go back to the ads here. It's like, it's like exhibit A, like it's there for you. You just don't want to see it because it's too much for you. It's like, then what is too much? It's like, then what is not too much? You know, it's just, it makes me laugh. Right. So that's just something I want to point out.
Yeah. It's funny. You know, I just think we all just have to be more endearing, you know, just in general as a group, as a unit, 100%. You know what I mean? Because it is us, the hardcore fans, and even the casuals who come into, you know, it's up to us to welcome them. It's so funny, right? It's like at the time of the year that we're recording this, right? It's right after New Year's, guys. It's about mid-January, maybe late January now, right? However you want.
Yeah.
Actually, tomorrow's February. I'm bugged out.
Yeah, bro, we're done. January is done.
We're done with January. Sorry. All right. Obviously, the year's flying by. Point being, it's right after the New Year. And right, like everybody has those New Year's resolutions, New Year, New Me. Some people want to go to the gym, right? And then you have those frequent gymmers, those ones who have been there for years, who see these groups of people come in and
get
out.
Get pissed off at the New Year's resolutions. Yeah.
Right, but there's so many of them, right? This what you just said, and this exactly goes with my point, so I'm glad you said that. There's so many of them who aren't like that, who do welcome the people because they remember when they were the ones with the New Year's resolution to get in the gym, right? It's almost the same thing with, like, wrestling fans. And I don't mean it just for deathmatch. Like, I even mean it for WWE.
In general, yeah.
Just absolutely. In general. Like, you get lumped into these crews, and it's almost like, oh, well, I like this, and I'm not allowed to like that. Like what you want. Tribalism. Thank you, Parrish. What you want. Be welcoming. Like, you know, I've met some of the most amazing people in the last 2 years just going to the Showboat. Just hanging out, going to the Melrose, you know, the ballroom for GCW, all this stuff. People who don't know me, who let me take pictures with them, of them, who let me talk to them and record. I mean, Parrish, you were there for homecoming. The way we were walking up and down the boardwalk, just
homecoming, man.
Homecoming to the TOS. It was something special.
I'll be back at TOS this year.
I'm aiming to do an Atlantic City trip. Don't know how many times this year, but I definitely would like to do it more than once.
TOS is the best time of year to go. I'm just going to say that.
I will say this. You know, it's looking like March is going to be quiet, and I'm sorry to anybody who's going to miss those shows because those cards are stacking up to be ridiculous. Ridiculous.
With the news GCW just broke out today, though. Yeah, but I'm just about to say, with the news GCW just broke out today about Kota Ibushi being at the Collective, I don't know, man.
My presence in Los Angeles
may be warranted. It may just be warranted, you know.
I might go sell my ass in the parking lot to get me to WrestleMania too, goddamn.
Even if I just do the Collective, I did the Collective in Dallas last year. I'm like, that was an experience in it. So that was just like a whole wrestling convention.
Yeah.
Like in its own right.
Have you ever been to a Collective, Lauren?
No, I've not. Cali's a little expensive on my budget, but maybe next year. I'm hoping
Philly,
next year. Yeah, Philly.
I'm hoping for next year too. I won't lie. I'm hoping for next year when it's in Philly as well to be a lot easier for me to get to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cali's a little bit you know, I've been saying it for a long time. Cali's just it's always in my reach, but always out of my reach, if that makes sense.
Yep, exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah, I did we sponsored a few Violent Sex Suffering shows last year and one of them I was supposed to shout out to Isaac, you're the man. I was supposed to go out there for one of their shows. We sponsored the Coast to Coast and then we sponsored the
Oh yeah.
The one right after that. Sorry, guys, the name's blanking on me. But we were I was supposed to fly out there. It was on a Thursday night, and it's, you know, it's like, so I was saying, it's like always there for me to get to, but just always out of reach. And maybe one day I'll get there. But next year, the collective,
next year, WrestleMania, yeah,
whatever it is, Philadelphia, I'm gonna be all sure. up in Philly like I'm a regular.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I mean, yeah, I'm gonna be out east more than once this year. For those of you that get bummed, I only come out once a year because like. Tournament Survivals is my like once a year East Coast trip. That's when everyone comes in. It's like the pilgrimage from everywhere and anywhere. Because I'm dead serious. Like
I like how that sounds.
I'm dead serious when I say it. Like I went to 666 2 years ago now, and I literally like airdropped in. My flight got delayed, and my rental car almost ran out of gas. I had to like fill it up. I only missed like one first round match. I was front row, so I was able to see like the rest of the tournament. Then last year, did seven incredible time. Like TOS is the best time to go, but
seven was crazy. We ran into those issues. Sorry to cut you off.
Pains my heart because I missed the entire TOS last year. Yeah, no, I did. I missed the entire
But remember, day. I was waiting for you, too, by the airport. We were, like, trying to link it up. Man, there were so many obstacles at us getting to TOS last year.
So many hurdles.
He was flying out. His flight got delayed or something. There was
flight. Flight got delayed in Dallas. So I was stuck up in Dallas's airport for a whole 12 hours.
Wow.
So it was, like, 2:30, and I was still up north by New York. I live right outside of New York City, right? And I put in the GPS to get down. The traffic to get down was insane. Like, normally, a 2.5-hour trip had became, like, a 3.5-hour to 4-hour trip.
Yeah, and you're so just like,
I was like, yo, bro, I was like, you got to fly into Philly. Remember, I was telling you, I was like, you got to fly into Philly.
And I was like, dog, they were saying, like, the next flight wasn't to Philly, wasn't Saturday night, and then I might as well just
fight this. I got there at the halftime. Okay. I got there at the halftime, and they ended up giving me to kind of make up for the fact that I got there so late. They ended up giving me free tickets to the Hall of Fame, the Deathmatch Hall of Fame.
Oh, good, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I wish
I would have known you back then, man.
Yeah, we would have been able to say what's up, but I got there for it, and you know I had been going to shows all that year, so like. Coming in, I was so excited for TOS because, like, oh, this is my first TOS in person. You know, I've watched this on YouTube. I've watched these on tapes for a minute now. Like, deathmatch tournament and anything, that was my first. So I was so excited. And I got there in the middle of the Drew Parker and Tremont final. Literally saw the last, like, the last 7 minutes of the match. I was like, ah.
I am so fortunate that as of the last few years, I have been able to attend basically the three biggest deathmatch tournaments, or three of the biggest deathmatch tournaments in the country. TOS, ICW Milwaukee runs the Insane Eight. That's up in Waukesha, Wisconsin, just outside of Milwaukee. I've gone the last 2 years there. And then the NGI in Chicago, the Nick Gage Invitational, which always, always delivers. People are always like, oh, NGI is just TOS light. I'm like, no. NGI goes hard. I mean, I was there for Takeda's return to the United States. Hell of a run. Like, for me, that was the first time I had met a Japanese deathmatch wrestler. And I got Takeda to sign someone had delivered to me a BJW program. I was the one with him with the BJW title. He was sitting on one of the turnbuckles with the belt and like covered in blood. And I had him sign a silver Sharpie. And I actually got that donated now, but I was like, I actually donated to someone for the Takeda auction that happened, if you remember that.
That's pretty sick.
When his wife passed away and he was being a single dad, a bunch of us got together to donate money to him, and I auctioned off that piece. And I loved that piece so much, but I was like, you know what? This is bigger than wrestling.
It's good karma. It's good karma right there.
So, but Takeda is an incredible human being, but an amazing deathmatch wrestler in person. He does the simple things really well. Everyone's like, oh, flashy this, flashy that. No. Like Drew Parker's learned, Rena's learned, all those guys have learned from Takeda. Simplicity is the spice of life sometimes.
Absolutely. I mean, some of the most simple things they do are kind of what riles us up and gets us kind of cheering and going crazy.
And I gotta say, one of the best matches, I will preach this match to the death of me. But Alex Colon, Masashi Takeda won at NGI 3. It was the first Chicago one they had done, but they brought in a tree branch during that match. And but like just the way they did things, like that popped the crowd to no end. But like they had the knife boards, they had the giant tubes, they had tubes on ladders, they did everything in the kitchen sink. And to me, to this day, like that match still holds up years later. That's the crazy thing. Still holds up.
I mean, Clone has a catalog, just a catalog. Some great matches, man. So many phenomenal matches, just like some that are quick, some that are longer, just some that tell a full story, some that tell a half a story, some that leave you wanting more. I mean, man, like you said, he's on definitely a well-deserved break right now, but Clone has has definitely put on a show with some of the very best.
You were at homecoming. Were you at the Cardona homecoming?
Yeah, the wedding. Come on.
So, I'm talking about the one when Cardona beat Gage.
Oh, the one before where he did. Yeah, he had just previously debuted just shortly before then, like either one or two events before then. Yeah,
Zombie Walk was that a few months before, but
I'm pretty sure. I'm not gonna lie. I'm pretty sure the homecoming and Showboat with Cardona was my first GCW event.
Okay.
Showboat. Yeah.
I gotta ask you, what did you think of Drew Parker Cologne?
On that show?
Yeah.
I mean, so I'll put it like this. I wasn't, and I'm going to be honest here, people don't hate me in the world. God. It wasn't until after TOS 7 that I like was like sold on Drew Parker, right? I felt like I didn't know anything about him. I'll be honest with you. I didn't know anything about him before I saw that he was announced for TOS 7. And when TOS 7 was kind of coming around, I kind of did like a deep dive again, just on all the people they announced and just like, cause I had watched a lot of the CZW, like back from like, I want to say 2005 era to like 2008. I was like very heavy on like receiving tapes. Like my older brother would get tapes a lot when we were young, you know, for ECW and all these other things. And then kind of as things transitioned, he brought me like a lot of deathmatch tapes and backyard wrestling tapes. And then I fell off the deathmatch for a minute because I got really big into Ring of Honor and, you know, things like that.
Of course.
And I started watching, you know, more, you know, that style wrestling. Also, as like an amateur folk style wrestler, I kind of drifted away from, you know, the deathmatch, just seeing like all the violence. I was kind of just put off by it for a little bit. And then out of nowhere, it just kind of popped back up, much like you said, and you're recommended for you on YouTube. I saw some Zona 23 stuff.
Oh, Zona 23.
Exactly. And I was sold again. I was like, man, I missed this. Like, where is all this? And then I kind of did a deep dive, right? So, like, Clone and Parker homecoming match, I'm sure, like, when I deep down think, it was good. I'm sure, though, like, because for that first few events of me going to GCW, they were still a little more deathmatch heavy. It was still, like, a very different experience for me being there physically, like, I hadn't been to a death match prior to those, you know?
Yeah.
I had just watched it on TV. And I'll tell you, man, like the Showboat, my first time in there, you know, like I smoked. So I had smoked a little bit before going in. Like, dude, being in that room and just hearing the energy, just seeing it all, it was exhilarating, right? But it was a lot. It was a lot. And I had to take it in and kind of mellow out.
Yeah. I'm just interested because, I mean, I had actually texted Cologne the next day after him and Drew, and I was like, I am so goddamn proud of you for that match. And he's just like, stop making me blush. Drew's the real MVP here. But like, Drew Parker has grown leaps and bounds from when a lot of the American fan base kind of knew him. His first show was To Live and Die in LA, I want to say 2017, 2018. And that was like he would come out with the baggy pants. He was doing just stuff in England. Like it was him and Chuck Mambo. If you remember Chuck Mambo, they were doing stuff. But he was like, I want to do this deathmatch stuff. And everyone kind of scoffed at him. They're like, oh, just some skinny, pretty boy, whatever. And then when he
startup wrestlers in the world,
literally, there's just an aura with him where it's like he's only 25 or so. He's young. And I mean, the future of deathmatch is in very good hands with him. But like those GCW Japan shows, the first time they did them, that got him his BJW contract. Those literally got him his contract.
I'm pretty sure he's one of like three foreigners to only ever hold.
Yeah, right.
The Gaijins to hold the BJW, the Freedoms. And there's another one I'm pretty sure he held too, that he's one of two people.
So he is one of three Gaijins to have ever won a deathmatch tournament in Japan. I believe Foley, I forget the third one. It might be Masada. Don't quote me on that one. Are the three that I've ever won a Japanese deathmatch tournament. Ikitosen, for those who are curious, for Drew. That was 2021. Drew is probably one of the, I mean, I think it's BJW and Freedoms. He's held the King of Freedoms championship. He's held both.
Yeah, he's the current King of Freedoms.
Current champion. Still is. I mean, the matches he's put on for that belt are world class. I mean,
he wrestled Miedo. Miedo had just separated his shoulder.
Don't remind me of Miedo. Me and Miedo, we're like buddies now. Me and Miedo had an interesting time. I guess I gotta dish the dirt on this one with him and Ciclope here. So NGI, this most recent Nick Gage Invitational, I was already helping out Big F and Joe. Shout out Big F and Joe, one of my favorite people as well. He was a part of the NGI. Literally almost didn't even make it to NGI. Literally, his initial flight got canceled. We had to basically scramble to get him a flight that had a 12-hour layover in JFK. And then he came into Chicago the morning of the tournament.
Wow.
But so that Sunday was Wisconsin Death Trip. Wisconsin Death Trip. And I drove him and Jimmy Lloyd, shout out Jimmy, to the venue in Milwaukee. And I'm like putting some stuff back in the car, and Miedo and Ciclope approached me, and Miedo's like, "You busy?" I'm like, "Oh, like, no, I'm not." And he shows me his phone. Like, again, guys, like, this is tourists being tourists. So I just want to explain that. He puts out his phone. He shows me his Google Maps. He shows me an address. It's the site of where Jeffrey Dahmer's house was. So I literally drove the two of them around Milwaukee to like the site. It wasn't like the house is not there anymore, but I drove them, and these guys are taking photos like in front of the steps.
What?
Of where Jeffrey Dahmer's house was. I didn't tell him it was the exact house, so apologies.
Oh my god,
but like the exact like address of where it was.
Yeah, time for me to take your picture.
I couldn't believe this. And so like whenever they see me, they'll always give me free merch or always say hi to me now. Like me and Ciclope Miedo, we're like the best of buds now. So
pretty funny.
I always call him my Dahmer friend. I always call him my Dahmer friend now.
That's hysterical. I mean, I would do the same. I would always reference that because that is wild as hell. That is my Miedo and Ciclope story is nowhere near as cool. Me and Savino were walking the boardwalk before recording his episode, and I told him I would buy him lunch before we went upstairs and recorded. And I remember us just going to Brickers Burgers. We sat down, and the next thing, him and Miedo and Ciclope get sat right next to us, and the entire time now we're eating, Savino's like turning. You know, he's like turning to talk to them randomly, and then like the waitress is like, Oh, they're wrestlers? Oh, they do that craziness, right? And they're like, they're just trying to eat their breakfast, dude.
Yeah, what the hell?
Breakfast. Yeah.
And we're all just like there, and then out of nowhere, we were just like, you know, oh, sorry. I ended up paying for their breakfast too, but man, just like, dude, it was hysterical, man. They were just sitting there. It was funny. They were just like 2 feet away from us, and like, you know, like when you do like the side eye to like, all right, are you gonna bother me? Are you gonna leave me alone?
Yeah, like you're gonna
like,
go.
Like the entire time that they're eating, like what's up? Am I gonna be left alone? It was pretty funny.
I gotta say as well, they're amazing. They're wonderful guys. I was there for their return to the States at Cage of Survival. What a moment!
That was a super pop. Super well, pop when they wrestled Rena and Toro, you're saying?
Oh my god, man.
That was a batshit crazy tag match.
I mean, for one, like when Brett was making the cryptic tweets about I got a big surprise for everyone, like this is for all the fans who have stuck with them and all that. And I'm like, who's, and I'm like, oh my God. I shed a tear too when he announced Macizos was coming back. I'm like, I was about to message Brett, but like, you're bullshitting me. You're bullshitting me right now, bro. They are not here. Like, I've been dying to meet them. And we took a photo at that COS. That was the same match where Sorvino cut his knee. I was right next to him actually when that happened.
I was right behind you guys.
You, the hell?
I was right behind you guys.
Okay, yeah.
This is literally the event right before we all met each other. Because it was after that event, we kind of like were eyeing each other down a bit. And then I remember.
I didn't know who you were, but you and Sorvino.
Because I had showed him, I have a bunch of pictures in the videos of mine, have him with his hat on backwards in the background. So, you know, I was like, yo, bro, like, I was like, I have a bunch of videos in here with you in it. I was like, how do you feel about, you know, like doing an episode where we talk about you? And then that's kind of what set it off, because the vlog I made about him, like, that's after the interview, was all literally just, it wasn't anything that we did there. It was all footage from, like, other events where I was just recording stuff and he was in the background. So it just worked out where I'm talking about him and, like, how he's creating his own thing. And, you know, I already had all this stuff to mingle together of him running past people to record entrances and, you know, stuff like that.
He flies around. Me and him during Cage of Survival, I mean, you were right behind us, but like, you probably remember when Mike's like, you sure we should stay here? And Kaya McKenna, she's like, yeah, you'll be fine. And I'm like, I guess we'll be fine. So it's like the row of like me, Sorvino, you know, TJ by now probably as well. TJ in front
the whole
of
squad,
the three of us. We're just all chilling there. We're like, we're really going to die here, aren't we?
Yeah, it's insane.
That was close. That
environment was just insane, dude. And then just the COS itself, like with Murdoch and
Jesus, Murdoch and Cologne.
Some of those spots are crazy.
I was nervous. And then I sent some of the clips to Joel Bateman. And he's like, that is some very flimsy wire. Stuff for the cage.
Like, just the setup flimsy. Of the cage alone.
No, I sat on the bum of Cologne doing the over onto that pane right in front of us.
So yeah.
I showed. Yeah. He's like, that is not some very well secured wiring.
Not at all. I mean, even when they went through the front, even when they went through the folded part of the cage, that was held by the rope.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was insane too. I mean, like, all the spots of that event were insane. I mean, I remember that was my first experience seeing Ciclope outside of Zona videos.
Oh yeah,
so I'd only seen them in Zona videos. I hadn't seen them when they were in, you know, GCW and Homedale and all that. Like, those are for like the real OGs. You know, that was like
for a lot of us that have stuck by GCW. That was such a huge moment for us.
Yeah, because I mean,
we didn't know if they were going to come back. We didn't know if they were ever going to come back.
Not a lot of people did. I mean, I remember, and I mean, Parrish has heard me talk about this so many times. Like, before GCW, when it was Jersey Championship Wrestling, when Gino had it, like, that's when I was watching it. And, you know, when it sold, I didn't know, you know, like, what it was going to be, man. First and foremost, we've been doing all this talking, but he mentioned a guy that's honestly, to me, one of the goats of just wrestling in general. Shout out to Brett, man, because he is doing the Lord's work with his booking. And the people he is bringing, I mean... We talked about Kota Ibushi for the Collective. I mean, Maki Ito, fucking Rena, Drew.
The Kingo.
Oh, my God. The Kingo. Kingo. I have a ring-worn sign, the Kingo helmet from the match against Bandito. I got it.
That's awesome. New Year's.
At New Year's. It was a once-in-a-lifetime piece. He said, listen, I'm only here for right now, and I'm never coming back with them. And I was like, give it to me. Give it to me. Sign it. But yeah, man, shout out to Brett because he's doing the Lord's work out here, man.
One of the busiest men in independent wrestling. Does not get any busier than what he's doing
right now. And all it sounds like it's all wrestling at this.
All wrestling, I was gonna say
all the wrestling. Bump independent, just the independent scene.
That's what I'm saying. In wrestling.
I want to pivot just a little bit. I want to plug a promotion that's really near and dear to my heart. Who me and Sean talked a little bit before we went on air, that I'm actually absolutely honored to be sponsoring and working for No Man's Land Wrestling. They're going to be running March 17th at the H2O Center in Williamstown, New Jersey. Of course, the House of Tremont, as I call it. But it's being run with Neil Diamond Cutter, who's literally one of my best friends in the entire freaking world. I owe Neil a shit ton. And then Satu Jin and Thomas Held. I actually just literally today, as of we're recording this, the episode is out for everyone. I'm doing a collaborative piece called The Road to No Man's Land, where I spotlight the promotion, whether it's the visionaries behind it, whether it's talent, whether it's the commentary team, we're working on it. Just really trying to give this promotion a new life, because they're a brand new promotion, literally from the ground up. It's an absolute honor. And something I want to talk about too, just a little bit, is thanks to the podcast, I'm trying to do commentary. I'm trying to do wrestling commentary. As of right now, my commentary debut will be March 17th. I am doing a match for the show. Happy to say I'll be doing the Jess Moss, Kelsey Reagan match for that show. I'm really honored to be doing it. So it's a huge honor. And I want to thank Neil so much for letting me be a part of it, sponsor it. But he was like, hey, if you want to do commentary for a match, we'll let you. And I said, absolutely. So you'll be seeing clips. Me and Serena will both be there making sure the Kings Road page is full of clips. We have an incredible card. Callum Butcher, if you know DMDU, not of DMDU fame, he's making his American Deathmatch debut at No Man's Land Wrestling against Satu Jin. The main event, as of right now, we got Neil Diamond Cutter facing Clint Margera, who's making his return to the United States. Wow. And the big third deathmatch we got is, if you know, one of the baddest women I know in deathmatch wrestling, Randy West, Michigan, blue blood to the bone. She is the current RPW Rust Belt deathmatch champion, teaming up with Casey Catal, taking on none other than Hoodfoot and Matt Tremont in a tag team. If you got nothing going on March 17th, if you want to come out to Williamstown, New Jersey, come to No Man's Land Wrestling Presents If It Bleeds. Myself, the Bocce Boys, Kings Road's going to be on that very soon. We're all sponsoring it. We're all going to be putting a hand in.
Shout out to the Bocce Boys.
Bocce's. I got to meet them one of these days. I got to make sure that happens. So
yeah, I've been around them. I've met Andy. I've shaken his hand. I don't think he would co-sign that he's met me. But I know we've taken hands because of, you know.
International man of mystery, Andy D. I'm just going to call him that from now on. International man of mystery. Sure.
But that's pretty dope, man. Check it out. Your Dose of Death, No Man's Land Wrestling. Shout out to Lauren. He's going to be stepping up, adding another feather to the cap, doing commentary, as he said. So that's pretty dope, man. Congratulations to you, to all you guys, for all your guys' work and hard work. Shout out to Neil, like you said, Neil Diamond Cutter. One of the best deathmatch wrestlers there is currently as well.
Want to put a thing out for Neil. I know he recently got injured, literally got a broken forearm right now. He's actually going to be getting surgery on Thursday. I'll send you guys the link. There's a GoFundMe going around for just the makeup for medical costs. So, but he will be good to go for No Man's Land. Basically, it's a 6-week recovery. No Man's Land's in 7 weeks. So we just hit the buzzer.
Leave the cast on and surgery. Hit him with it,
right? So,
feel free to donate to that GoFundMe. Feel free to donate to the GoFundMe for him. But he'll be back better than ever. But I just want to put that out there because as a community, we love to support one another. And Neil is someone who deserves your support.
Absolutely, guys. So he'll send that to us and we'll make sure it is in the description section of this video in our YouTube. So if you guys watch this on our YouTube when it debuts, it will be in the description section. You guys can click the link below. I'm going to preemptively do this now since I know it will be in here when we edit it. And we'll make sure that happens. So, guys, we got a chance to hear a bit about Lauren, to hear a bit about your Dose of Death and just some of the inner workings, its early beginnings, and just his co-host, Savino, just some of the items that he's kind of pushing to do. Certain things I'm sure we all want to talk about. We're going to kind of tangent off a little bit about him and your Dose of Death, and we're going to talk about some of what's occurred in the wrestling world just in the last couple weeks. Not to start grim, but for sure, something I definitely want to ask, I know Jay Briscoe was a huge, important wrestler in my lifetime, somebody who I was a ginormous fan of. I had the pleasure of meeting once at the Ring of Honor New Japan Supercard at the Garden a few years ago in 2019. I just wanted to say, like, did Jay mean anything to you? Was that any inspiration you took from him, you know, just kind of in your wrestling fandom?
With me? Jay, I had the pleasure of meeting him at Warrior Wrestling last year, and it was right after Hammerstein. I was at the GCW show in Hammerstein. Pretty much, Jay, to me, was truly one of the most influential wrestlers. I mean, one of the probably the best Ring of Honor champions ever, honestly. But I had a piece of the door from the main event of Hammerstein with the Briscoes versus Tremont and Gage when Gage made his huge return, and I had the Briscoes both sign it. And they asked me how you liked that show. It was a great time. But Jay, we kind of had a little fun. I wanted to like film a promo, but Jay as a joke would like no sell it. Like he just kind of like had the arms at this, and I was like, Mark was doing his best Mean Gene Okerlund for the show. Well, Jay's just no song. Because I had said, I was like, we should film a promo for GCW as a joke. And he took it kind of serious. But, like, again, we just no-sold it. And Jay was just, like, loving it. But he's like, I shook his hand. I was like, thank you so much. And I miss Jay. He really showed what it meant to not only just be a wrestler in the ring, but just a good human being outside of it. I know he had his demons in the past. And everyone has their demons in the past, but he overcame those and showed the true definition of being a better person and learning from your mistakes.
Just growth in general, I think, just kind of like what you were saying, you know, like one of the biggest controversies is the Warner denying the AEW tribute show and having it be on the YouTube and whatnot. And, you know, that's kind of on them for not choosing to see, you know, how he stepped up, that's how he elevated. But, you know, I think the fact that, and it's not to say it like that, so nobody come out their bridges about it, but when a figure such as Effie, who is such a leader of the wrestling is gay movement, of the LGBT community in wrestling, to come out on his own message and say how much Jay meant to him and how kind and beautiful Jay was as a person to him. Yeah. I think when people like that are speaking, their words should be taken into effect. And, you know, like you said, man, he overcame a lot. People, but, you know, it's just one of those things. People bring up dirt from the past. And, you know, when you're younger and you're a little bit more immature and you don't have the ability to use critical thinking and actually deep down think and use a deeper thought process, you know, sometimes ignorant things or less than kind things can be said. And like you said, man, the dude's life just kind of proved and shown that, you know, like something they all talked about even after he passed, how he believed in the power of prayer and so many other things. You know, I think, you know, he's a big loss to the community. I mean, Parrish, what do you have to say about it?
A big blow. I mean, I wasn't heavy on the Briscoes, I'm going to be honest, but like the very first time I got to see the Briscoes in action, it was ironically enough, both times I saw the Briscoes in action were in Dallas, Texas. The first time I saw them, I think it was that match against, if I'm not mistaken, it was against SGC. Was it for the tag team titles? I knew they had the GCW tag team titles at the time. And then the second time, of course, it was the supercard match against FTR. So I never got a chance to meet them, but I always got a chance to see how they operated in the ring. And man, they were Surgeon Generals. And just hearing all the words and all the outpouring of love that Jay received and how Jay was outside the ring, and just as a testament to the character and the man that he was, even past the mistakes that he's made. Like you said, Warner Brothers not getting that Warner or Warner Media, whatever, not giving them that time to have the tribute show. That's a blemish on their part. But of course, they did the right thing by allowing Jay and Mark to have that match a week later. And just a beautiful and touching tribute all the way around. And he will be sorely missed. He will be sorely missed by this wrestling community. And then, of course, just reaching for the sky. Just reach for the sky at all times, you know?
That's it. I love the story. Lauren, you're muted if you're trying to talk to us, brother.
I'll say top five dead or alive.
Yeah.
100,000%. 100,000%. I mean, the story Mark told at the funeral just the families got told, you know, for those who were able to see some of the clips that are circling the internet, definitely take the time to watch it if you can, definitely. And then, you know, I don't normally like to plug AEW because sometimes they like to buzz balls for smaller creators and stuff like that. But, you know, definitely go check out the Ring of Honor tribute to Jay Briscoe show on their YouTube. It's about 3 hours and some change. I've watched it a few times. It is a beautiful show. Definitely, you know, filled with a lot of emotion from a lot of great, you know, wrestlers. Some who had a deeper connection to Jay than others, but, you know, shout out to all of them for, you know, giving it their all and putting on a show. Let's get off that grim topic and let's get to some more recent news. I mean, the Royal Rumble just occurred this weekend. I mean, are we surprised? Cody Rhodes, Rhea Ripley. I did call them to winning, but
I did too.
Don Sean's a little frustrated. It was only 29 people in the Men's Royal Rumble this year.
Oh my God, we're not doing this, bro.
Curtis Axel versus Rey Mysterio.
Thank you. First of all, it was Curtis Axel as well. In what year? What, 2013, 2014? 2014. That happened as well? Yeah. 2018. Okay, then even more recent than that.
Listen, Curtis, listen. No, we're not. When Cody jumped over the top ropes, both of you hurt the floor. Imagine Rey Mysterio would have came out from under with the booyaka. No, I'm just kidding.
Even if that was the case, Gunther should have won that. Of course. Well, but overall, I think the right man won the Men's Rumble. The right man won the Rumble.
I agree. I agree.
Cody or nothing. Cody or nothing.
I will say that if the main event didn't happen the way it did later in the night, then yes, Sami Zayn should have, by all due, should have won that Royal Rumble. But you know what? That's okay. That's all right. What happened earlier in the night, later in that night, was meant to happen.
That's funny. Man, Cody winning.
Rhea
Cody going winning was definitely something. Rhea going bell to bell. I love that.
Wire to wire. I love the fact of that. And you know something? It's ironic with history because that was the fifth Women's Royal Rumble?
Yep.
And that's what it took. It wasn't until the fifth one where the first person went bell to bell for the men's too, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It was Shawn Michaels who went bell to bell in the fifth Rumble itself. So it was very...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was very much, you know, apropos that this happened at that time. And congratulations to Rhea. She is more than deserving of that match. I just hope in the case of the Raw Women's title match, which is wide open, people are smart enough to go with Asuka in terms of going against Bianca Belair.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would agree with that.
They're going to do the elimination chamber for the winner to face Bianca at Mania.
Yes, and I'm hoping that's it's my understanding.
I'm not going to lie. I think they're going to position Carmella.
No, come on, bro.
Listen, I'm just telling you, right? For her to return at this point in time.
I love Mella.
I like Mella too. I'm just saying this is what makes sense to me. For her returning at this point in time, it doesn't make sense for her to cut a promo that she's going to be competing at the top right before the Elimination Chamber. You know what I'm saying?
I can see Asuka and Carmella being the final two in the chamber.
And that could be something that they tried to preview with us seeing them last night, you know?
Yeah.
I'm saying, if you can't, like, if you just bring in, like, you reintroduced the Asuka of old, so I'm just like...
I mean, Kana is important to Japanese women's wrestling history. People need to remember that. It's kind of what...
That's what I'm saying.
Sorry, you guys are about to say something.
No, you reintroduced Kana, so it's just like, man, why go in the direction of, like, you know, as much, like I said, I love Carmella. I love that she's back. Wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah. I definitely think Kana coming back should have brought back that NXT mystique of Asuka, where, like, the streak started. I definitely think this is what needs to happen with that being brought back.
And I feel like that'll happen. I feel like if they go the direction I think they're going to go, Asuka will get that match against Bianca.
But does she get put over?
She should.
But does she?
I think she should. Yes, she, yes, yes. Listen.
I think Bianca loses at Mania for sure.
Then what, that'd be her? To be fair, she goes Mania to Mania. Right? Right, that's Mania to Mania.
Yeah, that's Mania.
I mean, one of the bigger stars that WWE has right now in terms of people of person of color, peaking interest, you know, stuff like that. She's a great PR thing for them as well. So that's why.
Bianca's done such a good job. She's one of those cases that she doesn't need the title.
That I do agree with. She's going to be near the top of the card regardless.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. She's done enough work where she's like, okay, I think she's good enough to not hold the title and she'll be okay even like without the title. I feel like Charlotte coming back and winning the title off rip in her first match back. I'm like, did you really need to do that?
That was the first time in my life I was not upset about it because Jesus, what a terrible, terrible run Ronda was having. I mean, she even botched one more last promo where she called it Russell Slam or whatever it was, SummerSlam. She was all wrong about her pay-per-view. Like, I'm not going to stunt. That was the first and only time where I was ever like, thank you, Charlotte, for winning the belt on your first night back again. Because at this point, I would watch her beat Ronda every night for the belt if that's what it took to not see Ronda wear the belt anymore.
Damn, that's kind of harsh, Sean.
No, bro. No offense, man. That was. I'd rather watch Liv run 5 more times before I see.
I would too.
I would love to watch Liv win the title 5 more times.
Because
I would have been okay with her even winning the Rumble, going wide or wide.
Bro, the fact that they're trying to sell us that she's the baddest woman on the planet, I'm tired of hearing that. We all watched her get her shit knocked out twice in MMA fights. She's not the baddest woman on the planet. Not even close.
Nope.
It's always the same thing. She grabs the arm. She looks at the camera. She's like, you want me to do it? You want me to do the arm bar? I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Are you ready? Like...
It's like some really bad cliche like C-list movie. It's literally what it's like.
Dude, I'd rather go watch The Rock go act in a movie again where he's just gonna be The Rock, just in a different
setting.
I feel like The Rock. You know? I don't know
that, Black that Adam is, like The Rock, same person.
In a way, very much so. In a way,
yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like Rhea Ripley in the last few years. Yes. And I feel like that's, of course, I feel like Rhea Ripley should get this match back at WrestleMania.
The story's there with Rhea.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's kind of ideal. I wish they would have went the Rhea and Bianca Belair route, but I understand because of what happened. I feel like they're running back the pandemic stories all over again.
They are.
And it's a cool move. I do like that move for Garth.
Smart. It's smart. I think Rhea, like you said, challenges Charlotte is smart. It picks up from last year where she lost the NXT Women's title to her. And it establishes her at a WrestleMania goes Hollywood. Like, this is something I think a lot of people are missing. And when WrestleMania 21 occurred, which was WrestleMania Go Hollywood, the first one, that was where John Cena won his first title. That was where Batista won from Triple H, you know.
Yeah.
Those were star. That was a star-making Mania. I can't see them trying not to put the youngster and Rhea over Charlotte. You know, this is going to be her career-defining moment. So, in my opinion, it has to be Rhea to win, you know. It has to be a tough fought win, but she has to be the one to win.
It will be. I think it will be head and shoulders better than their first
Rhea match. Is one of the hottest acts in WWE right now. Like, she's undeniable right now. It's really, everything she does is gold.
Literally. I mean, even since NXT, though, she's been hot since the whole Toni Storm feud in NXT UK.
Yeah, that was cool.
I mean, we can go that far back with her. I mean, I've been a fan since before the black hair with the long blonde hair. So it's pretty cool, you know, to see her go from where, you know, she was one of the very first Australian stars really signed to, you know, the WWE. Now she is, in my opinion, the biggest one from... You know,
agreed.
From Australia, New Zealand region, and just in general, you know, and they have a lot more talent now. There.
Let's call it what it is. She is the mommy's the leader of Judgment Day. Sorry to offend Valor, but mommy is the leader. She is.
I'm not gonna lie, I was really happy we finally got to see Balor versus Cody. I just wish it was for a little bit more grand, you know. Yeah, I wish it was pay per view. I wish. We got to see the demon, you know. There's obviously like this the fanboy in me that wanted way more out of it, but I'm glad we're getting to see some of them.
Right. For the fact that we were able to get that match, of course, I thought they were going to go the Dom versus Cody route, but pretty cool that they went the Finn versus Cody route.
Yeah.
I mean, Edge playing a role in it. I feel like it won't happen again. I feel like these two will cross paths one more time next time. It may be for the WWE Championship, potentially. So
all I know is they need to start putting Bullet Club storyline in it.
I think that's why I'm saying, I think the next time around it definitely will. For the fact that the former leader went up against the former member, the story, part of that story is definitely there.
Well, you know, you got to remember one of the biggest storylines that really kind of put the Bullet Club over was the Kenny and Cody struggle for the leadership.
Bullet Club is fine. Bullet Club is fine.
Bullet Club is fine.
It's absolutely fine. Oh, man, I posted right about that when I saw the Bucks change their bio to the gun. That made me
Bullet
so
Club
happy.
Bullet Club is fine, man. It's fine.
It's fine.
It's never going anywhere.
After Saturday night, it's more than fine.
Definitely more than fine.
Awesome. So, Lauren, any events coming up that you're looking forward to? Any events you're going to be at that you want to tell the world about?
Of course, No Man's Land in March is kind of the one I'm really gearing my focus and energy to. But, I mean, of course, I mean, the beginning of March, you got that big Showboat weekend, you know? I mean, Drew Parker, Johnny Murdoch, the Duke versus the Prince. I mean, it does not get any better than that. I mean, I've said it since Murdoch came back to GCW, NGI6, but his run from NGI6 all the way to NGI7, chef's kiss. He put himself back out there. He took calculated risks. He went on and won NGI7, usurping Alex Colon from the deathmatch ace hole that GCW's been kind of needing. He's really the deathmatch ace for GCW right now. But Drew, I mean, scorched earth, King of Freedom's champion, one of the best and brightest stars that this industry has. But also, that same event, Rini Yamashita, bringing that GCW Ultraviolent back. I will be dancing to Mariah Carey when that shit blasts at the Showboat from my home. I will make sure. I'll make damn sure. I will be vibing
hard. You'll see my ass. You'll see my ass the whole entire time, guys. Make sure you are watching the hard cam. Rena versus Casey. Anybody that's been following Talking Elite, you guys know those are two of my favorite female wrestlers in the world currently. The fact that the queens of the modern day deathmatch, the modern day queens of deathmatch, are about to tie it up. The only thing that would make it better would be if Casey still had her American Deathmatch Championship.
Due to contractual obligations, we wouldn't be able to see one of those belts, but.
I know. I'm just saying.
Everyone in the building would already be like, oh, champ versus champ. You know, it is.
Yeah,
what it is.
Everybody knows what it is.
I got to say, though, I want to just plug someone who does an incredible job did an incredible job covering women's deathmatch wrestling, Tamaya Greenlee. She goes by Scholar and Elbow on Insta and I believe Twitter as well. If you guys picked up not the most recent PWI, but the one with the tag team rankings, she did an article about the Woman of Deathmatch, and Casey was kind of at the forefront of it. But
yeah, the centerfold, I remember that.
And the thing is, I mean, there's not a lot of talk about the Woman of Deathmatch wrestling enough, I'll say. And I mean, Casey really became not just any other woman doing deathmatch, but one of the top tier. And I had such a fun conversation. Me and Servina both had a fun conversation with her on Your Dose of Death. So if you want to hit up an episode, if you're looking curious, that's one I highly recommend. She is incredibly intelligent when it comes to deathmatch wrestling. Really was such an intelligent but fun conversation with her. So shout out to Tamaya. Shout out to Women's Deathmatch Wrestling. It's some of the best stuff you see out there. I'm just going to say that.
I mean, Sawyer Wreck, just another woman in name.
One of my favorites. Literally
Mickey
my favorite.
Mickey Knuckles, a classic OG Nick in the Women's Deathmatch game. Nick. You got newer ones, Kelsey Reagan. You know, you got
Charlie Evans, Shaft Chavs.
Charlie Evans, one of the best. You know what I mean? There's so many up-and-comers. There's so many who have been on the ground putting in work for a few years. There's some other ones, you know, who are not as
Lindsay Snow, Ludark Shaitan.
Lindsay Snow, I mean, you can keep going. I mean, you even got Sadie Suicide, you know what I mean?
Sadie.
There's a bunch, you know, there's a bunch that are just coming all over. And while I'm kind of blanking right now a little bit, this is just one of those symptoms of the case. You know, you get a little excited and you want to plug 1,000 people. And, you know, there's just some great wrestling going on out there, guys. There's amazing deathmatch wrestling. There's amazing ultra-violent wrestling, extreme wrestling, hardcore wrestling, however you want to view it, however you want to call it. Right now, it's a great
time. All the genres are getting their love.
The genre.
I mean, it's a great time to be a fan. It's a great time to be a fan. To be a part of the community, it's an amazing time to be a creator. It's an amazing time to be a follower. It's an amazing time to be a supporter. So whatever it is,
nothing but kindred spirits coming along in the realm of professional wrestling, man. Nothing but kindred spirits.
Love it. I love it.
It's a beautiful
thing.
I want to say one more thing just for anyone who is curious about getting into the realm of content creation. I want to instill just a little wisdom here because I've always, in the back of my mind, I've always thought, when will this end? When, like, should I walk away? I'm not getting the attention or the views that others are getting. Do not worry about the noise around you because it is only going to deter you. It is only going to sidetrack you. It is taking me 2 years to really come to terms that I'm sticking with this. I'm not leaving this anytime soon. I love what I do. If you do what you do and you love what you do, it is going to go such a long way. And it's just for anything content creation wise, not just wrestling. Like, if you love what you do, that is all you need.
There you go. You guys heard it from Lauren himself, guys. I think that's a perfect message to end this on. I don't even want to ruin anything.
Hell no, that's a beautiful way to
uplifting like that, guys. Not just with content creating, though, guys. I think the important way that I could piggyback off of that comment before we wrap this up, and I'll let you know my boy Paris say his part on it as well, is, and just in general, anything you do, right? Before you begin, I think, and it's just something I read to myself every day, and this is just me shooting at the hip here, guys, and kind of erasing Don Sean and letting you guys into the mind of Sean Soto, who is I am as the man. before you begin anything, everything always has an end. And I think if you accept that and you still pursue everything you're going to do with 100% of your ability, knowing that you're doing this for what it's going to mean to you rather than what it's going to mean to everybody else, then I think you're doing the right thing with anything. Like he said, I don't do this for the views. I don't do it for, I want to become Instagram famous or social media famous, anything like that. I'll be honest with you guys. I work around a lot of celebrities, and I say a lot, and I change my tone when I say that because every day, 365 days a year, I am surrounded by talent. I work in film. I work in music. I am surrounded by artists, celebrities, people who are the influencers of the world, right? And none of that matters. You know, what matters is what all of this means to you on the inside. And for me, as a fan of pro wrestling, as a fan of combat sports, as a fan of fitness, as a fan of people chasing their dreams, you know, the one thing I want to let you guys remember is I'm a fan of you. So push yourselves, do everything, even when the road is hard, don't make a mountain out of a molehill. Get over that molehill. There's going to be 10 other molehills in your way. And just remember that you and your opinion and what you're doing matters most to you. And use that as your motivation. Don Sean Dunzo, what you got for him, St. Polo?
Man, I feel like you two have just spoken so beautifully. I can't even top that. But yeah, I feel like the number one thing is to just show up for yourself. I know, like, in terms of like the last year or so, it's just been a lot going on. But you know, when you have a dream, it's like what Dusty said like that long time ago when he won the world title. If you got a dream, hold on to it and shoot for the sky. There's nothing more important than showing up for yourself in the midst of pursuing that. There's nothing more important than being alive and being aware in the moment as well. I can tell you in the times I have been pursuing this pro wrestling dream in the last few months, there have been times I'm like, damn, is this really for real? Am I really doing this? Is it really happening? But you know, your body is like saying, what the fuck, dude? Just like stop, just cease, take yourself out of that scenario. But it's more of, if you want it, then you're not going to listen to the outside sources. You're not going to listen to the outside noise. You're just going to listen to yourself. And then, like I said, you're going to show up for yourself. You're going to show up and put in the hard work. You're going to show up and put in the hours, the long hours, the long nights, and the early mornings. And you're going to appreciate yourself when it's all said and done. And when you can stand back and look at the canvas that you painted and the beautiful portrait that you've painted. So if there's anything that I could say, you know, make good choices along the way. And as Sting told me on Saturday when I saw him at WrestleCon, you know, stay clean and stay healthy, and everything else shall follow.
Love it.
There you go, guys. Well, I've been Don Sean. This has been St. Polo. This has been Lauren from Your Dose of Death, guys. Thank you guys so much for joining us for another episode in 2023. We got more planned for you guys. And a very, very, very big announcement. You guys will probably be seeing this mid-February. Just stay tuned. Very, 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 very big talking lead announcement coming mid-March.
Can't wait.
Talk to you guys.
Cannot wait.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, have you guys heard of the new show on the Countout Network, the Ichiban Sweetcast?
It's the brand new Japan Pro Wrestling podcast starring the International Wrestling Grand Prix. That's me, your good friend Curtis Spears.
And me, your bad friend, Rafe Hewson. And we're here to talk about everything New Japan Pro Wrestling, reacting to everything, getting worked up, getting very happy, sometimes crying. Kind of like something else we used to do, right?
Oh, yeah. That was the old Okada Shorts podcast, right?
Ah, that's right. And if you love that show, you're going to love this show because it's exactly the same show.
Yeah, we just had to change the name.
Yeah, we did. But you can check it everywhere on a social media handle that we haven't made yet.
Yeah, we're really new to this. So what you can do is search on your favorite podcast catcher of choice. Look for the Ichiban Sweetcast.
Sweetcast, Ichiban.
This has been a Countout Podcast.